to New World Notes, hosted by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. The latest Project Censored report is out. We'll hear some of their picks of the year's top news stories that never got reported in the corporate-controlled news media. And we'll hear some fire-breathing words by the director of Project Censored, Mickey Huff. I hope you'll stay tuned. Every year at this time, Project Censored issues a book discussing the year's most important couple dozen news stories that the so-called mainstream media underreported or failed to report entirely. The latest book just out is called Censored 2013, and you can learn more about it at their website, www.projectcensored.org. The book costs money, but for free, Project Censored gives us brief summaries of the top 25 suppressed stories. We'll read a few of these today, and some more real soon. But let me put this in context. Here's a news story that didn't make Project Censored's list this year. It's too recent. As you know, in mid-October in Pakistan, Taliban thugs shot three young girls. One of them was 14-year-old Malala Yousafzai, an advocate for girls' education. You heard about this. Over and over we heard about this, for weeks. Millions of words of press, God only knows how many hours of TV coverage, were devoted to Malala's fate, her transfer to England, her process of recovering. This brutal attack on children became excellent propaganda supporting the U.S. military's so-called counterinsurgency activities overseas. And the story was everywhere. The very same week in October, in Helmand province in Afghanistan, three young children, aged 12, 10, and 8, were killed by a U.S. military airstrike. The military believed some men were planting a bomb in the road. They launched an airstrike against the supposed bombers, knowing full well that three small children were right nearby and would likely die. The kids were in a field collecting dung for fuel. Our flyboys blasted the alleged bomb planters to smithereens, and at the same time, they blasted three innocent children to smithereens along with them. How many acres of newsprint were devoted to the killing of these three children? How many hours of TV time? According to the corporate media, it didn't happen, and I'll bet you never heard of it. In fact, this murder by the U.S. did happen. The New York Times did mention it once, very briefly, near the end of a long article on another subject. Three children brutally attacked is big news when it serves a political purpose. Three children brutally attacked the same week, just a few miles away, is not news when it would give you second thoughts about our country's eternal wars abroad. And credit to independent journalist Dave Lindorf for unearthing this story, researching it, and publishing it. But it was never published in a place that very many people were likely to see. In a talk this past September 11, Project Censored's Mickey Huff berates the corporate-controlled media for helping to create false histories, and for worse. It's a complex speech, and I think it's best heard in segments. So let's hear a segment. Then we'll take a break and hear some top censored news stories of 2012. And then back to Huff. Here he is.
We've really been tackling these issues in our new work, this concept of unhistory. Noam Chomsky not long ago was writing about this phenomenon of unhistory, and I'm a professor of history, and I really focus a lot of time on these unhistories, meaning the histories that are supported by factual evidence but don't seem to make it into the history books. Right, we're familiar with Howard Zinn and James Loewen and Francis Fitzgerald and many, many, many others over the years that have helped bring these vernacular narratives and counter-narratives to light that are really based on factual evidence, but they get suppressed through the process of officializing narratives, narratives based on mythologies, not factual realities. And as you all know here, the events of 9/11 really kind of fit into a whole stream of mythic narratives that get blurred, obfuscated, distorted, converted into Hallmark postcards and bumper stickers, and used as means to raise money to further empire. And this is, again, a process that needs extraordinarily deconstructed. Michael Peretti, another progressive leftist historian, wrote in a work called History is Mystery, "Those engaged in the manufacturing of history often introduce distortions at the point of origin, well before history is written or even played out. This initial process of control is not usually left to chance, but is regularly pursued by interested parties who are situated to manipulate the record." William Casey, director of the Central Intelligence Agency, in 1981 stated, leaving an early meeting with Reagan and his cabinet, quote, "We'll know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American people believe is false." Are we there yet? For several years now, we at Project Censored have been describing the Americans' general lack of awareness about what's going on in the country and the world as a literal and ongoing truth emergency. It is a state of psychic numbing and information overload, one which results from the ubiquitous din of establishment propaganda and top-down managed news. These are very specific terms that I'm using for a reason. Many Americans don't know what they don't know, and many can't discern between what is real and manufactured. Still others show little interest outside their daily lives. Although our culture is awash in information, many citizens often lack an adequate understanding of what that information really means, because the institutions that disseminate this information, particularly the news media — I'd like to make a correction from Barry Zwicker, with all due respect, it is not the mainstream media. It is the corporate media. It is the megaphone of the 1%. It is the mechanism of thought control in our society that is most ubiquitously used. And it is a great achievement of corporate propaganda that we say mainstream media, because we're the mainstream, not the corporate media. So stop saying mainstream media unless you're talking about your media. We gotta watch how we talk. We have to watch the words we use, because they have meaning. And we all slide into these meanings. And we all need to make friendly nudges to each other when we are found using the terms that come from the ruling class to describe our own lives. We need to have our own vernacular narratives and reclaim these narratives for the common good. The only way we can do that is by working together and being mutually respectful. And I am saying this with all due respect to Barry or any others whom I have said this to. It is not a negative critique. It is a reminder to us that we are the 99% and the mainstream, and we have to really make our voices heard. As I was saying, if journalism then is this rough draft of history, then we are really in for a rude awakening, because these rough drafts are not always accurate. And whether it's because journalistic deadlines or ignorance of an issue or fear of offending a source or an advertiser or an owner of a major media outlet, there's many possible reasons that rough drafts are not always accurate. For they tend to become narratives in maintenance of the established order rather than factually inclusive reports about a complex and diverse world. In the United States, culturally conditioned assumptions like exceptionalism, mythic narratives of exceptionalism, or the belief in the country's unique moral mission are very powerful and pervasive, and they further bolster these establishment views, which in turn maintain order and reinforce hierarchy and oppression. They represent an underlying bias. This is what America is and is not. This is what America does and does not do. Thus, historical mythic narratives are a significant part of educational and media institutions in the United States, and they frame our perception. Let's go back to William Casey's quote from the CIA. Much of the information we receive comes from mass media and institutions of education, all of which are subject to some degree of government oversight and control, as well as clearly from the private sector. The leading public institutions of our society, the government, the mass media, the educational institutions, are increasingly influenced or outright owned by extremely wealthy transnational corporations that have vested interests in returns on venture capital, not democracy, and have very little interest in factual reality or truth. These interests adhere to the bottom line first and foremost, and these are the reasons we need to call them out for that bias.
On New World Notes, that was Mickey Huff, director of Project Censored, reminding us that the view of reality presented in the mass media is not neutral, but, to put it baldly, propaganda designed to support established power. It does so by reinforcing mythic narratives about the country, and it supports established power in its choice of language to name things. And it supports established power by not reporting stories that would call the establishment into question. Speaking of, let's take a look at some of the top stories of 2012 that the corporate media decided not to report. Hot off Project Censor's website. Number one is Signs of an Emerging Police State. Since the passage of the 2001 Patriot Act, the United States has become increasingly monitored and militarized at the expense of civil liberties. The 2012 National Defense Authorization Act allows the military to detain indefinitely without trial any U.S. citizen that the government labels a terrorist or an accessory to terrorism. President Obama's National Defense Resources Preparedness Executive Order authorizes widespread federal and military control of the national economy and resources during, quote, emergency and non-emergency conditions. Since 2010, the Department of Homeland Security has run a campaign called If You See Something, Say Something. This encourages the public to report all suspicious activity to local authorities. Acts that Homeland Security identifies as suspicious include the constitutionally protected right to criticize the government or engage in nonviolent protest. So if you see any of that going on, be sure to report it to the authorities immediately. So, underreported story number one, signs of an emerging police state. Here's another. Number three, Fukushima nuclear disaster worse than anticipated. I think they should have made that worse than reported, but that's what they say. Let's read it. Evidence from many independent sources suggests that the negative consequences of the 2011 Fukushima Daiichi nuclear disaster are far greater than first acknowledged or understood. According to a report in the International Journal of Health Sciences, the radioactive fallout in Japan caused 14,000 excess deaths in the United States. Meanwhile, the Environmental Protection Agency's radiation detection network has serious weaknesses, including a lack of maintenance and equipment that is often improperly calibrated. There's a news story that you will not find in your corporate media, TV, or print. Let me read one sentence of that again, in case you're thinking you could not have heard that right. The radioactive fallout in Japan caused 14,000 excess deaths in the United States. I think that if a crazy guy with a gun killed 14 people, one would hear about it constantly from coast to coast for some time. Here is 14,000 Americans killed by the man-made nuclear disaster That is Fukushima Daiichi plant. 14,000 Americans killed, never made the establishment media. How about number 8? NATO war crimes in Libya. The North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, claimed it was entering the Libyan conflict for humanitarian reasons. But the results have been far from humane. For instance, in July 2011, NATO aircraft bombed Libya's main water supply facility. This plant provided water to approximately 70% of the nation's population. To help remove Muammar Gaddafi from office, the United States and NATO bombed the water supply plant that provides water to 70% of the people of Libya. And in other Libya news, the BBC finally reported that the British Special Forces played a key role in guiding Libya's so-called freedom fighters to victory. The BBC reported this about a year after independent media reported it. Let's read one more. Number 15, dangers of everyday technology. Recent research raises compelling concerns about two commonplace technologies, cellular phones and microwave ovens. Sidebar comment, what do cell phones and microwave ovens have in common? They both generate very high frequency electromagnetic radiation. They both generate microwaves. Back to the text. Heavy long-term exposure to cell phone radiation increases risks of cancer, including leukemia. It also impairs sperm production in males. Prenatal exposure to cell phone radiation has been shown to produce blood-brain barrier leakage and brain, liver, and eye damage. The microwave radiation that heats food also creates free radicals that can become carcinogenic. While the consumption of microwaved food is associated with short-term decreases in white blood cells, the Federal Food and Drug Administration has yet to recognize studies that indicate microwave ovens alter food's nutritional structure. With both microwave ovens and cell phones, most of the studies that indicate minimal or no health risks are in fact industry-sponsored studies. There's 4 of Project Censor's list of top 25 stories that never made the corporate media this past year. Let's return to Mickey Huff's talk. He's already talked about how the media falsify the news and also falsify recorded history. Now let's listen as he goes still a step further. He talks about how the media work hand in glove with the corporations and the government to suppress all historical research that calls into question the official version of any story. The phonier the official story, the more the story's doubters get ignored or mocked or vilified. To say the least, this is not what the news media ought to be doing. Here again is Mickey Huff.
Michael Parenti has talked also about the stacked deck of history as a political scientist. He argues that history is not just what historians say it is, but what government agencies, corporate publishing conglomerates, chain store distributors, mass media pundits, editors, reviewers, and other ideological gatekeepers want to put into circulation. Not surprisingly, the deck is stacked in favor of those who deal the cards. One must then ask, how might those dealing the cards influence the reporting of news? One way is by framing or controlling what is considered legitimate information and what is not, i.e. what makes the news and what's on the test in school, solely on the basis of what the dealers say it is without question. Any official account of the past not only impact perception in the present, but also consistently crowd out vernacular views, often rendering them obscure and illegitimate, thus part of a pile of unhistory. George Orwell wrote about the unperson, the person that did not conform to the state propaganda and rule. The unhistory is the history that defies the dominant state corporatist narrative. The events of 9/11 fit into that category. There are many facts of 9/11 that defy the official narrative, which is why they find themselves on the margins or the outside of even allegedly intellectual culture. What we need to do as citizens of a purportedly free society is simply demand that those narratives are present, and events like this remind us that they are part of the public sphere. I think this is a very, very important thing that we all collectively need to remember. Uncritical acceptance of any official narrative is the result of conventional education, past reporting. This can all shade interpretations of the present. Noam Chomsky also has referred to this as the necessary illusions of our democracy. In manipulating historical records as they unfold, censorship occurs at the moment of inception and continues to shape and frame public perceptions in ways that distract attention from cause and effect analysis of the events, often by concealing the power elite's motives and the role these play in political and economic matters. And in the introduction of our new book, Censored 2013, this issue of false consciousness is addressed by Nafis Mossadegh Ahmed, who refers to this again, and it's promoted as propaganda and maintenance of the powerful, and he has written several books on that, including The War on Truth and The War on Freedom. Many of you are probably aware of Nafis's work, and if not, I would urge you to look at them. I'd like to close by using a couple examples that discuss this narrative perception of history, by pointing out what's now at the front page of ProjectCensored.org, a study that I did with Laurel Krauss. Some of you may recognize her name, the sister of her slain sister, Allison Krauss, at the Kent State shootings, this Kent State massacre of May 1970. And the reason I bring this article up, it's part of our 2013 censored book, but this is a classic example of how we're working to uncensor the unhistories of our culture. Because the protesters at Kent State University and the people that were shot, 4 killed, 9 wounded, were murdered by the state. And I don't mean that glibly. I mean that new evidence that has been shown by forensic experts and even championed by Dennis Kucinich in Congress and then sent to the Department of Justice, which after a year of ignoring these calls for a new investigation on the Kent State shootings, ignored all the new evidence, recited the old evidence, and said there wasn't any cause to open a new case, even though it's been shown that FBI provocateurs working as part of the COINTELPRO program were there firing shots. They were the shots that allegedly were claimed to be sniper shots, and there are audio voice footage that has been decoded that is someone giving an order for the National Guard to actually fire on unarmed people at the Kent State campus. And the reason that that's poignant isn't just because of the radical injustices that these people have endured for 4 decades. It's because we see the same things happening today with the Occupy movement. We see the same repeated demonization of dissidents and protesters and radical justifications by the state for violence. I know Ann Coulter is an extreme example, but she has cited Kent State as a warning to Occupy, saying that we should kill more of these people, essentially, so that they go away. Now, that's pretty radical. And the state does operate in radical ways at times. But there are also other means by which, throughout history, that the state has operated to condemn, unpopularize, or dissuade people from investigating factual evidence. And through the 1960s, on the run-up to the Kent State shootings, the Central Intelligence Agency helped develop and draft memos that coined the term conspiracy theorist to label Edward J. Epstein about his critiques of the Warren Commission report and the J.F. Kennedy assassination, where they urged people in the media through their Operation Mockingbird programs, as they played their mighty Wurlitzer, to twist, distort, attack anyone that would suggest there were problems with this official narrative of JFK. They did the same types of things with the Kent State shootings. They've done the same things with October Surprise. They've done the same things with the Oklahoma City bombings. They've done the same things with 9/11. They've done the same things with WMD. They've done the same things with election fraud. They've done the same things. Does this get repetitive yet? Is there a pattern afoot? I would submit to you, again, back to our issues of language, that we really need to think about how we say what we say. We need to very clearly focus on the machinations of power in our society and how they help mold, control, and suppress freedom, specifically through dissent of those who wish to seek the truth about what really goes on in their society so they can make the world the beautiful place that it really can be. As Aldous Huxley once wrote, the facts do not cease to exist simply because they are ignored. And we're here to unignore them.
And that's the way it was. Project Censored's Mickey Huff ending an impassioned speech with a great quote from Aldous Huxley. Facts do not cease to exist simply because they are ignored. For more information on Project Censored, check out their website, www.projectcensored.org. And for an archive of all our shows, plus links, pretty pictures, and my address, check out our own website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. New World Notes comes to you from the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of that beacon of light in darkest Connecticut, the University of Hartford. I thank you for listening. Until next week, illegitimae non carborundum, question authority, and please support your alternative media, including perhaps this radio station. Ciao.